thank you so much for being here. When I was thinking about what I'd like to do this week, I thought initially that I would do what I did 2 years ago, which was to talk about hymnody, because that has something to do with Lutheranism and worship, and I'm the musician for the week. And I couldn't think of anything new that I had to say about hymnody. And so I sort of forgot about that, and I said, why don't I just do what I'm thinking about these days? What I'm thinking about is enjoying piano. My career has been as a church musician, and so you may ask, what is he doing playing Chopin on the piano? I should be playing Bach on the organ. The truth is that I've always had a dual love of music and could never decide what I wanted to do. I loved playing piano and performing. I played for 25 years with a piano trio, the Arden Trio, with violin, cello, and piano. And we played a lot of concerts and toured all over the country and did some recordings. And I love that. But equally, I love church music and working with choirs and congregations and playing the organ. And so my career has been doing both. The one thing that I haven't done is play piano strictly for my own pleasure. But 4 years ago I retired, and I took a couple years off just to not do music and see what I wanted to do. As a New Yorker, inveterate New Yorker for 50 years, I decided what I wanted to do was to really discover all the neighborhoods in the city that I had never seen, but have always heard. So I went, I walked and I biked through five boroughs of New York City and had a great time. Every day I went, I discovered something unexpected and that I didn't know about. And this discovery seems to be a part of me. And we moved from New York to Chicago this past February. And so now I'm discovering a new city. But also, being settled after 3 years of being sort of in between apartments, and now finally settled in a new place for at least what we think will be a long time, I was taken with the idea that I just like to play the piano for my own pleasure. And one piece that I've always wanted to learn and never did was the Chopin Preludes. I grew up as a teenager. I had a recording of it by Alexander Brilovsky. I even remember him. I loved listening to that recording of the Chopin Preludes. And I learned a few of the easy ones through the years, but I never had time to tackle some of the more difficult ones. So this spring, I started practicing them, and without any particular reason other than my own pleasure learning them. And then I finally put that together with Holden Village, and I said, well, why don't I share it with everybody at Holden? So that's why I'm doing that today. The Chopin Preludes are a wonderful set of 24 pieces. Why 24? Because there are 12 major keys and there are 12 minor keys. So when you do one in every single major and minor key, you end up with 24. We don't know exactly why Chopin decided to do this, while he was composing them, he had a copy of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, which is a set of 24 preludes and fugues in every major and minor key. So that was clearly a model for him. Bach, by the way, liked the idea so much he did it twice. We had Well-Tempered Clavier 1 and Well-Tempered Clavier 2 to make 48 pieces for a total. Another reason why Chopin may have been drawn to this idea is that composers have always identified certain keys with certain emotions. The Eroica Symphony of Beethoven is in E flat major, which to Beethoven and many other people is a very heroic key. Anything written in C major is pretty straightforward, happy, not too serious. Anything written in E major tends to be poetic and beautiful, I think. I think of it as a green key. I love E major. Anything written in D minor, really serious, often tragic. So the emotions that composers have attached to each of the different keys have inspired them to write certain kind of music for each key. And in the case of Chopin's 24 preludes, every single piece is different, not only in its emotional content, but in its compositional technique. It's a stunning example of creativity in these 24 pieces that Chopin tried out so many things. He set problems, compositional problems, to solve in many of them. And so I'd like to just tell you a little bit about those as I play through them. I think we'll begin, though, with the first one. Oh, the order. What order did he put them in? Well, Bach put them in a very logical order. Number one of Bach's Preludes and Fugues was in C major. Number two was in C minor. Number three was in C sharp major. Number four was in C sharp minor. Number five, D major, and so on. Right up the chromatic scale. Not Chopin. Chopin had a little more erudite approach to the arrangement. He used the circle of fifths. Now, I don't know how many of you know the circle of fifths, but it's a way of organizing all the keys by fifths, so that you start with C, and then you go to its relative minor, which is the minor key that uses the same notes as C major, but it starts on A. So you have C major, and then A minor. So that's the first two, C major, A minor. So then you go up a fifth from C to G, and that gives you G major, and its relative minor, E minor. Then you go up a fifth to D, C, G, D, A, E, B, F sharp, C sharp, G sharp, E flat, B flat, F, that's 12, and then the next one is back to C. So that's a way of organizing all 12 keys through what's called the circle of fifths. Okay, that's enough said about that. Number one is almost an homage to Bach, because Bach's first C major prelude is the famous. It's an arpeggiated set of chords. And Chopin does the same arpeggiation, but he does it differently. So the same idea, arpeggiation, break up the chord into its different notes, but Chopin does it quite differently. Thank you. very short. Most of these are very short indeed. Number two, A minor. The interesting thing about this one, and it's sort of an in-joke between the performer and the composer, is that it's not written in A minor until the last two chords. He starts out, then he goes to G major, and then he goes to some funny chords, and finally at the end he ends in E major, started in E minor, ends in E major, but then he says, oh yeah, this is A minor. And finally we have the very first A minor chord in the piece. So, this piece also has a hidden counter melody in the accompaniment figure of the left hand. Sort of hidden there in the middle, and that's sort of a counterpoint to the melody that comes in the right hand. Number three in G major, I think it just wrote for contrast. Also, G major is a very happy kind of key. played that.
Pride.
It's an example of one of those beautiful romantic melodies with which, when you break it down, what is it? Oh yeah, that's great. How do you think of that? Oh yes. It's like the Beethoven 7th Symphony. But what he does with the harmony is extraordinary. Okay, number 5 in D major. We always assume that Chopin has beautiful melodies and often intricate, but actually he doesn't. This is a good example of where there's sort of a hint of a melody somewhere in the middle, but not really. Learn how to play a melody in the left hand. So you have to play the left hand louder than the right hand. This was also played at Chopin's funeral. Number 7 is just a short dance in the style of a mazurka, which is a Polish dance. Chopin was Polish, and he never forgot his heritage, even though he lived most of his life in Paris. Thank you. Number eight, in F sharp minor, I'll show you the music to this one. This is the one I always put off learning.
Oh my God.
Too many notes.
Too many notes.
So, yes, lots of little notes, you know. And, that's right, Kathy helps us. This is a very stormy piece, and the accompaniment chords are arpeggiated, but backwards. Instead of they're strong piece for E major, and it's always intrigued me for that reason. Oh, this came off. Let's see where it's supposed to be here. Thank you. 10 in C sharp minor, quite a contrast. Some of his characteristic little ornamental notes in this, by the way. One of the most charming things about Chopin's music is the way he used ornamental notes. Okay, number 12 in G sharp minor has a melody which goes up the scale like this. While you're playing that in the right hand, you also have to play some accompaniment notes in the right hand, as well as in the left hand. Sharp major. And this is sort of like one of the nocturnes that Chopin wrote, quite a number. A night piece, and evocative of calm and rest. This is in a form ABA. And the B section goes a little bit slower, and it's has another characteristic of Chopin's music in that even though the melody's on top in the right hand, the left hand accompaniment has a counter melody, which is almost more beautiful and more interesting. So when I get to that contrasting section, listen to what he does in the accompaniment. Thank you. So number 14 in E flat major is just simply weird. Famous, perhaps, called the Raindrop Prelude, because while he has this beautiful melody. He has the rain dropping on the A flat for practically the whole piece. Thank you. things that you may have noticed is that so much of the great piano repertoire comes to us from the 19th century, especially the ambitious, very romantic works, not only by Chopin, but by Brahms and Liszt and other great composers of the 19th century. But I wonder if you've ever asked the question, why? Why did they write so much great piano music during those years? And I think the reason is because the piano was essentially a new instrument. It was a new medium which composers could use to express themselves. But those of you who know music history say, well, that's not true, because Cristofori invented the piano way back in 1607, which is true. But the sound of that instrument was more like a harpsichord, and it wasn't very loud. That Bach, when he tried one of these fancy new forte pianos, he said, it's just not very not very loud, and you can't do much with it. So what happened with the piano, like so many instruments, is that the makers kept experimenting with improving it. And by the early 19th century, it had gotten bigger, the strings had gotten thicker, the sound had gotten louder, and it was, this doesn't quite work, and it was essentially a new instrument, a new sound, and it was inspiring to the composers. The piano didn't really reach its present form until around 1850, which was 10 years after Chopin wrote these pieces and most of his work. Well, since he died in 1849. Yes, I guess so. at age 39, by the way. He wrote these when he was 28. But the piano of Beethoven's day, right before Chopin, Beethoven died in 1827. He wrote all his stuff around the year 1800 and after. Beethoven wanted to have more sound, big gestures. And of course he went deaf too, so he couldn't hear it very well. And so it's his piano studio in his apartment. After he died, people went in, they took a look at the piano, and it was a mass of broken strings, because he had worked so hard to get it as loud as he really wanted it. And the pianos were not built with iron frames the way they are now. They were wooden frames. So if you tried to stretch the string with a lot of tension on it, it'll eventually warp the wood. And so it wasn't until around 1840 that we have our modern steel frame on the piano, and that made the piano what it is today. Just missed Chopin. it was actually invented in Boston, and it made its way back to Europe afterwards. So anyway, I think the fact that this was a new, evolving instrument, and composers were looking for how to use this sound, what can it do? And the preludes are a perfect example of exploring what the piano can do, explains why this was the golden age for piano writing. Still some wonderful pieces written today, but it's not quite the same. Okay, going on comes the one virtuoso piece, the B flat minor. So here goes.
Thank you.
spend time on. Okay. Now, number 17, we're getting close to 24 now. Number 17, A flat major. A flat major, I think, is a very serene key, another night key. And Chopin does an interesting thing with the accompanying chords quite often, is that he'll have this chord. But he'll have the outer notes in the left hand and the right hand playing inside the chord so that this note comes out. We can play it a little louder. One of those creative uses of the instrument, I think. Who would have thought? This has a lovely melody. And then twice in this piece, he goes to new keys. It's going to be the bane of me. And when he goes to these modulations, I think it's always a little bit magical and unexpected. So twice he modulates. Thank you. Number 18 in F minor. You decide what he had in mind. Is really like an etude where he's giving us a technical problem. And the technical problem in this piece is arpeggiating over big distances. That kind of thing. So, but like all etudes, Chopin, by the way, wrote 24 etudes, each with a different technical problem to solve. But they don't have to be technical pieces, they're just beautiful pieces, and would certainly be the case with this one. Famous one, the C minor chord. Thank you. 21 is another fairly slow one, but the accompaniment figure is the interesting thing. It goes like this. So, starts on one note and then goes both directions, up and down. And uses that as a pattern for the accompaniment, that which is a compositional challenge. G minor. Let's just say it's sort of stormy. This is one of the more peaceful keys. And finally, number 24, D minor. What I said about D minor, serious key. Okay, and this has a bit of virtuosity thrown in.
Was he just because it was fun to do, or was there some
no one
commercial?
Knows. No one really knows. First of all, the name Prelude is usually something that comes before something. And these just are by themselves. I mean, some people say maybe they were meant to be preludes to other pieces. Like, it was the common practice for concert pianists in days of yore to start a concert just by fiddling around with some chords. Just as a way of sort of warming up and getting into the keys. And so maybe he wrote these, if he was going to do a piece in A-flat, he would warm up with this prelude in A-flat. But probably not.
How about his love life?
How did that affect you? And you told us a little bit about that.
I didn't tell you about that. Chopin never married, but he had an intense relationship, illicit, with the poet, the writer, the French writer, George Sand, who, she used the pen name, George Sand, and I forget what her real name was, but it was during the winter of 1838 through 1839 that he finished this work. And that winter he spent with George Sand and her children on the island of Majorca. Because he wanted to get away from the cold winters of Paris because he was suffering from a lung disease, which eventually killed him. So there's no doubt that the love that you hear expressed in many of these pieces is personal to Chopin.
I'm glad I sat where I sat because I could watch your hands, which to me were incredible. The strength and the resonance of the note coming from different ways that you held your fingers. And I couldn't help but think that you really get to the point where, as an artist, your hands become an extension of the instrument. Do you ever feel that in your soul?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I never thought of it that way, but absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was delightful to watch.
Yeah, I never watch. Just scary.
I'm curious how you approached learning them. Did you dabble at all of them at once, or do them one at a time, or?
I kind of worked my way, being Lutheran and not particularly creative. I started with number one. When I learned to play hymns, by the way, when I was 11, I started with hymn number one. Open now thy gates of beauty and the tear of the chest. It was not an easy hymn, by the way. It taught me a lot. I just worked my way through it. And when I got to the difficult ones that I didn't know, I would work on those. But then I would continue on until I finally made it to number 24. And then I realized number 24 was pretty hard, so I should spend some extra time on that. I shouldn't start at number one.
May I ask what you play at home? I assume your main instrument that you play the most is in your home. And what was the maker of that?
Steinway. Yes. In fact, it's a new instrument for me. It was a retirement gift for myself.
So do you have a favorite hymn or classical piece that you, this comes right to your mind, that you like the most?
Piano? Ooh, there's so many. I like anything by Brahms, and he's very close to my heart. Chopin, although I love it, I feel German when I play it. It's not my native tongue. So I try to learn how to make it not sound so German. Schubert, his piano sonatas, his impromptus, are dear pieces to my heart.
Was number 7 the Fig Newton song?
What was number 7? Did they use that for it?
I think so.
I don't, I missed that. I'm kind of glad I missed it. I always remember the Toreador song from Carmen was used to sell STP motor. STP, we need some STP. Kind of ruined the song for me. Yes, but I don't, I go to, I mostly just work on the parts that I don't know. And so I take passages and go over them endless number of times and hope that I remember it the next time.
You did in Big Sky a dress rehearsal of this, mm-hmm. and you played it from beginning to end without pause.
Yeah, which I'll do on Thursday.
Oh.
I'm going to do this on Thursday without pause, so if you want to come and hear it again.
Thursday night.
Thursday night, yeah.
And you're an emotional wreck afterwards.
Well, actually, I mean, breaking it up by talking makes it a little easier,
yeah, yeah.
Because when you just go right from one to the next, it's such a change of emotion that it's...
Are you in here on Thursday or in the refrigerator?
It's in here.
Okay.
Because the kids have the refrigerator. Yeah. I was hoping we could do it in there, but we'll do it in here. I like the intimacy of this room. Mm-hmm. So, not the piano so much, but...
I just have another...
Yeah.
So does Kathy, do you play any role in this? I noticed you... knew exactly when to turn the page, and are you a part of it?
I heard this a lot while he was pregnant. So, I've turned pages for him for many years. I used to turn for the art trio a lot.
Could I ask, how old was he when he died?
39. Yeah. Yeah, Mozart was 36.
Yep.
Schubert was 31,
mm-hmm.
and they all wrote a full lifetime's work of Chopin, though, is unique among composers in that he only wrote for the piano.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a couple of piano concertos where the orchestra has almost nothing to do. He plays a chord, and you know the piano goes off and plays and a few chords and beautiful concertos, but not really orchestral pieces. So, okay, thank you so much for coming.